I'm your host, Shaylin Cochran, and we are joined today with Soldotna City Manager Stephanie Queen. Stephanie, good to see you. Thanks for being here
today. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You bet. And so much to talk about. A lot going on within the city of Soldotna, both right now and also a lot of big plans for the future that we'll get into over the next hour. And of course, if you have any questions, if you would like to get in on the conversation, we would love to hear from you. 283-8414 is the number. You can give us a call during the show, 283-8414, or drop us a line on Facebook. We'll be checking that out throughout the program as well. And a ton to get started with, I guess, since we're on Wednesday and it's a city council meeting coming up tonight and also a work session coming up this evening, I guess we'll just kind of start there with what's the latest and greatest with the city council.
Sure. So tonight, the council is going to have a chance to vote on our upcoming capital year budget, the FY19 capital budget. So we'll be presenting the projects, $730,000 worth of projects that we feel are the highest priority for the upcoming year. It's this year's capital budget's pretty maintenance focused in that we're doing proposing some funding for some upgrading some roads, Marydale and Readout, some of our aging infrastructure that's a bit in need of attention, as well as a couple of small projects related to parks that we're proposing for the upcoming year. One of them would be a hard surface basketball court over at Soldotna Creek Park to add an additional amenity there, bring another user group there, as well as replacing some older park equipment. The one additional project we're proposing in this year's capital budget that I think is really important and going to see a lot of benefit is ADA accessibility to the upper mezzanine level of the sports center. So that facility, as many folks know, it's been around for a long time. It's not accessible currently to get to that upper level, and we're proposing a lift that we've seen in other uses locally that we think is going to help meet that need. So,
and I'm trying to think of how to segue from that into this long list of things that I have in front of me to talk about. And I guess we'll start with the sports center, and we're still putting money into the sports center right now. But I know that, of course, there are plans to hopefully one day have the funds to make that a little bit bigger, a little bit better, and serve a lot more folks and a lot more functions. And where's the process right now with finding funding and coming up with things for that proposed field house there?
Sure. So it's been a long recognized need in our area that one thing we're lacking is an indoor turf facility. And there's been different planning efforts over the years. The city's been engaged with a group of local stakeholders for the past 3 or 4 years looking at this project and actually appropriated the funds several years ago to design a field house. So the design is completed. We're at a point where there's a stakeholder group looking at kind of the fiscal landscape and trying to identify where some funding for that project might be available and what could be expected to be able to raise. And then we'll be coming back to the council in the next couple of months and presenting all of that information about what we think is able to be raised, what that project is going to cost, what it's going to cost ongoing from a maintenance and operating perspective, so that the council will be able to decide if this is the right project to move forward with now.
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting to see how that kind of plays out, because we're hearing, you know, on a national level that the economy is just absolutely cooking, and we're seeing oil prices go up here in the state of Alaska. So it'll be interesting to see, are there investment opportunities there? Are there dollars out there for projects like this, considering, you know, where the state's been with revenue sharing the last few years and things like that? It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I'm sure that, of course, you're hopeful that money will exist, but do you think that there's a lot of appetite with this present city council? And this is kind of a tough one, because any project would be dealt with city councils far down the road. But in general, is there an appetite from the city level to fill in a big gap there, or does that gap need to be closed pretty much all the way?
I think the city council recognizes that there's broad support for this idea within the community. I mean, I had lunch yesterday at Heritage Place with residents who love getting outside and walking on the bike paths and the sidewalks in the summer. They would really benefit from an indoor track where they could go and get the same exercise and social activities in the winter. So whether we're talking about youth sports, adult sports, hobby leagues, or just health and wellness in general, there's a lot of broad support, but that's a different question than is now the right time to fund the project. And one thing that the city council members have expressed and are very aware of is that this is not likely to be a project that has the majority of its funding found in other sources. Unlike in years past, where those were possibilities. So the question now is going to be, is the city council willing to incur debt and borrow? And a lot of our past projects have been paid with a combination of pay-as-you-go, kind of out of our own fund balance, combined with other sources, state revenue grants and things. It's going to be a different type of question as to whether or not this is the right project to potentially incur some debt. And that's one of the questions that they need more information from us. The administration's pulling together that information on what would that debt service be, how much of it will be deferred by revenue from a facility, from the activities there, so that they have all that information to make that decision. And I anticipate we'll be able to bring that information back in the next 2 months or so.
Yeah, a lot of questions on sort of the other side of this, were it to be built, is how much more, how much money that money could come back. You mentioned, you know, deferring some of those funds from user fees, but you know, what is that being used for? As you scale down that facility and make it open to fewer things, then that revenue potential becomes less. And so it's a little bit of a back and forth, chicken before the egg situation there with it. You want to finance a big building that might, you know, bring in big events and that sort of thing, but then you're financing a big building.
You know, I actually like how this building got scaled down. It, partially the impetus was budget, you know, the cost of a facility. But I think in this case, it's a smart choice because now there's a size that can, I think, be maximized in terms of use. So looking at the way that field could lay out, whether it's wrestling mats or indoor soccer or any of the other activities, I think it's at a size now that makes the most sense for our community. So conversations years ago had been, it'd be great to have a full field. You know, people think of the Dome and Anchorage that they visited, and that idea had been floated for a long time. What we've got now designed is much smaller than that, but I think it's right-sized for our community.
And another sort of project, and I'm curious to see exactly how involved the city is in this one. We just got a little bit of an update here a week or so ago, maybe a couple weeks ago, I suppose it was now, about the proposed visitor center down by Soldotna Creek and taking up some of that space, what's known as the Davis Block down there, where there's currently just a parking lot. How's that coming along? And again, what's the city's role in trying to develop a space like that?
Sure. Well, you know, it's a different role for this project. So in this case, the city's not leading the design efforts. The chamber is funding that effort, and they've got a board and a building committee that's leading that effort, and then they consult with us and keep us in the loop. The city owns Soldotna Creek Park, and we acquired that lower parking level, the Davis Block property, several years ago for the potential for future development. And in the interim, it's become a very beneficial and useful parking spot, particularly on Wednesdays.
Right.
So we're collaborating and partnering, but this effort, this visitor center project, has been predominantly chamber led and a project that their board and their members have been working on for quite a long time.
And with those two sort of event spaces, is that competition for one another, or is that just a dual opportunity for more people?
So there's a need in our area, I believe, and the city's done some of our own in internal and looking into this question. There's a lack of event space at a certain size. So a lot of the analysis that have been done over the years identify there's quite a few spaces that you can rent in our Kenai, Soldotna, Nikiski area, Sterling, of a certain size. What's lacking is a large event space. And at some point, that was identified as a potential niche that could be met. You know, we could draw in more predominantly in-state meetings, but there's a lot of groups that hold meetings in Alaska that Kenai Soldotna would be on their rotating list if there was a space with hotel amenities close by that could meet that bigger group. Again, similar to with the field house, predominantly, I think, because of budget, the space is constrained in what you can build reasonably and fundraise and pay for. And so that's one of the questions we'll be working out back and forth with the chamber and their leadership, as well as advising the council on, is this a size that makes sense? Is it bringing something new? You know, our strategy in general is not necessarily to duplicate or have a newer of something if it already exists in this area. So my analysis and thought on this project, definitely it enhances access to that visitor center. It's a great location right in the heart of Soldotna to educate tourists on everything that's going on. The meeting space, that's something that deserves a little bit more attention, and we're ongoing having conversations with the chamber about what that might look like that makes the best sense.
I want to talk about that. The area of town that we're talking about specifically is right there at Birch Street and Saldana Creek Park and the Tesoro right there. And that's a lot going on. And we refer to that a lot of times as sort of downtown Saldana. And I'm just, we talk about this. It seems like every time you and I sit down together, we talk about this notion of a downtown Saldana and sort of the challenges in developing that as a meeting space, as an event space, as a pedestrian and bike friendly space. But at the same time, we've got this 5-lane highway cruising right through the middle of it. And if I don't know if I can, I don't have a specific question except for maybe, are there going to be any more stoplights along that stretch of road? But that is kind of a challenge. And so is there any discussion about there being sort of a capacity for how much you have going on in that space with, you know, all those different things going on at the same time?
Well, with 1,000+ people coming into that park on a Wednesday, it causes additional pressure definitely on the surrounding area. And some of it, I think, is welcomed, and some of it, you know, is a bit of a concern for some of the businesses that are around there. We have to explore new things like additional off-site parking areas, such as in front of the Aspen Hotel. Their ownership's always been really generous in allowing that space to be used kind of as an ancillary parking area. We've explored on-street parking on Birch Street, you know, just changing up the ways so that we can be accommodating to the number of people who want to be there with their lawn chairs or shopping from the vendors that are there on a Wednesday, but also recognizing that if a local business's parking lot is full with people who aren't shopping at that business, that's something we need to be aware of. And the chamber's very aware of it as well. It's just, you know, I think the success has exceeded certainly my expectations. And so we're now a few years into this process. It's a bit of a still evolution and learning curve.
Yeah. And how is that conversation continuing just about how to smooth that out? Because again, there are so many things that are going on right there in sort of downtown. I'll concede, I will call it downtown. but to make that friendlier to things, I mean, bridges over the highway to make crossing easier. I don't know. Are there big ideas like that? What's the conversation like for, you know, 20, 30 years down the road?
Sure. So a couple of exciting conversations. We updated a downtown plan a couple years ago where we got together with local business owners and people who care about our area and how it works and looks. One of the ideas was, as you mentioned, we're not going to turn the Sterling Highway into a main street, not in the way that people think of a traditional main street,
right,
with storefronts up front and wide, you know, pedestrian-friendly sidewalks. It's always going to be that highway. So one concept that was explored is kind of this idea of a one-off, that potentially we could have further development of parallel roads, one off of the highway, and focus a lot of that type of development there, more pedestrian-friendly. And that's an idea we continue to explore. It would require some partnerships with business owners, but might come with some additional benefits as well. And we've got kind of a parallel street right now on the north side of the highway, back where Kaladi Brothers is and mm-hmm. and CES. One idea that had been floated is the idea of a similar concept on the other side, between the river and the highway. You know, if a lot of cities focus some development on their riverfronts, and there's a lot of success stories both for the property owners and the community in general. And though it's really in its infancy at this point, it's just a concept, it presents an opportunity to further make Saldana look and function the way that a lot of people would wish. You know, having a place to park, a place to get dinner and see the river, and then walk to listen to some music.
Yeah, it's a lot of things need to come together, because again, it's mm-hmm. when you look at how the city has grown up over the last 50, 60 years, this stuff wasn't thought about. I mean, mm-hmm. it's just as simple as that. It wasn't thought about. 60 years ago, you wouldn't have thought about there being 1,000 people gathered for a thing right there on the mm-hmm. river one night a week. That was some homesteader's backyard back then. So yeah, having this foresight is, I'm glad to hear that there are these conversations going for long-term, what it potentially could and maybe even should look like. That's, yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of, I mean, our role, I mean, governments have been talking about economic development for a long time. Our role really is one of a facilitator oftentimes, where we're trying to solicit ideas, bring people to the table. And if there's interest within the community, see if that's something that makes sense and try and facilitate. We're not the ones necessarily generating the ideas or pushing a particular way that we think the city should look, but we're in a position to help bring people together and facilitate some of those conversations.
And you mentioned sort of Well, I guess we already talked a little bit about partnerships in terms of the water systems and those sorts of things, those bigger things. But are there other, you know, the chamber is another sort of partner with sort of some of these economic development questions, and then within the city, how big of a role does the economic development department within the city play with trying to court businesses and those sorts mm-hmm. of things? Is that really part of the city's role, or is that more of a chamber role?
I think it's definitely part of our role, and we recognize that it's a little bit different. And so I don't think there's been tension when the city of Slatina started a few years ago wanting to focus more on economic development. I think it was welcomed by the chamber because what we don't do is much marketing. We don't really market our area. That's well covered by the organizations that do marketing. But what we do is we control the regulations that are in place, so we have the ability, if there's something that's not working for folks, we can change it. We can help. We have a lot of conversations. You know, I was talking to our building official this morning, tire kickers, people who come in with ideas. They're just kind of scanning the landscape, looking for something, and oftentimes we've been able to connect them with someone who's wanting to sell a property or someone who has a similar idea that maybe they should go talk to. And our focus has been from the start not to work so hard on attracting new businesses. We don't spend a lot of time, you know, trying to woo or convince businesses to come to our area. Our focus has always been focus on the businesses we already have, make sure they have everything they need to do well. So when it comes to, you know, downtown development, something we heard a lot is just beautifying the highways. People want a more attractive downtown. And so although it's a small thing, you know, this year we're going to be doing a lot more landscaping downtown. We've got the highway banners that we did a few years ago. Local photographers contributed to those. There are things we can do that I think squarely fits within our role as the local municipality to assist what's already going on in the private and nonprofit sectors.
Stephanie Queen, Soldotna City Manager, joining us today on the Kenai Conversation. If you would like to get in on the conversation, 283-8414 is the number. Again, 283-8414. And you know, in talking about some of these roles that the city plays, I'm, you know, and also keeping in mind that tonight is again City Council night. I was looking at there's an ordinance up for introduction tonight that would change the role of the mayor's office a little bit, give the mayor a vote on every matter before the city council, take away those veto powers. That's a little bit different discussion maybe for later, but I'm curious, that's a change that was made possible by the voters approving a switch to a home rule system a couple of years ago. And I'm curious, have there been, I mean, for the casual observer, even for the slightly more than casual observer like myself, I haven't noticed a whole lot of changes that came with switching from a general law system of local governance to a home rule setup. And have there been any changes? Was there a lot of, you know, kind of housekeeping that needed to be done that went along with that?
No. So, you know, even if you're a person who's really wonky and into how these different governments are set up, I think that the charter commission that was set up that drafted the Soldotna's Home Rule Charter recognized that it was more of an effort to protect the city against outside influences and be able to be self-determining, kind of the form of local government most closest to the people. So even when they set it up, a lot of things were intentionally kept exactly the same. So even if we have additional abilities to change the way we do some zoning things, we really haven't. So it was intended to protect and sustain business as usual from several perspectives.
You know, something else that I wanted to ask about, we've just started here in Kenai, the dipnet fishery began this week. And we're kind of ramping up. The fish haven't quite shown up yet, but the people are certainly showing up. And, you know, always here in Kenai, we, you know, touch base with the city and how are you guys doing? Are you ready for the dipnet fishery and all that? Is there a process like that in Soldotna, or is there a sort of a ramping up for this big pulse of people that come at least pass through Soldotna for a minute on their way to catch fish in Kenai or somewhere else? Yeah. Are more police out on the streets, anything like that?
So from public safety, yeah, that's it. Our police in the summer, activity really ramps up, not from a crime perspective, but from a traffic perspective.
Right.
And our campgrounds and parks, they do as well. So we'll staff some extra folks to accommodate those heavier times and you know, people occasionally will, I think most of the people will stay pretty close to Kenai, but we get people coming and cleaning the fish at the the fish cleaning station at Centennial.
Sure.
And so we'll see some additional traffic for sure. I think you hit it. Public safety and parks, those are the predominantly the two areas where that happens.
What are the, are there, maybe you know these off the top of your head or maybe you don't, the number of seasonal employees that, that make those parks run in the summer? Because those are, I mean, there's a pretty short period of time during the summer when those are completely packed to capacity pretty much every day. What kind of a workforce does it take to take care of that?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know the number off the top of my head, although I signed a bunch of them back in, I signed off on a bunch of them. I would say it's probably 10 to 15
oh, okay.
additional hires that are temporary and seasonal that we bring on. And again, those are oftentimes staffing the campgrounds and areas where we see, you know, quite a bit of traffic in the summer.
Is it folks that come back sort of year after year and do the same gig? Is that, are there a lot of repeat? I don't know. That would, that sounds like to me would be a really fun gig, like, you know, later in life in retirement, just kind of hang out at the campground and make sure things go smoothly and people have firewood and that sort of thing.
Sure. Yeah. We've got some returning campground hosts. We've got also got some returning young people who have come and worked for us doing landscaping or different things that have returned year after year.
Again, Stephanie Queen joining us this morning on the Kenai Conversation. 283-8414 is the number if you would like to get in on the conversation. Again, 283-8414. And for the past couple of years, the city council and city administration have all been working diligently and hearing lots and lots and lots of public comments about the proposed annexation areas and that, right, that concept more broadly. And I guess... just to kind of bring folks up to speed, where are we at with that process? I know the city council recently signed off on directing administration to submit a draft petition, but maybe you could fill us in on what that draft petition will kind of look like and just where we are sort of on this time frame.
Sure. Well, and before I do that, I guess I want to start with just why. Why is the city, I mean, that's a question that
that's
comes
a good
up
question,
most often.
Yes.
Why is the city still talking about this? So like we've talked about, all the development that's going on, it's great. It comes with a lot of benefits to the city, and we've seen a lot of continued development inside the city. We've also seen a lot right outside the city, and so as our city's grown over the last 50 years, Soldotna was first incorporated in the 60s, the boundaries really haven't changed. And so what that means for us when we're delivering services like public safety or building roads or, you know, trying to figure out how big the library needs to be, we have to accommodate all these regional users who come into the city and use some of these services. And this growth causes a bit of additional pressure. So right now the city is looking at, spent the last 3 years really drilling down on this question of how much does it cost us to deliver these services and do we have the capacity to serve areas bigger than our existing footprint? That was kind of the first study that was done, this fiscal impact analysis. And then more recently, spending more time talking to people in the study areas about what their concerns are, how they feel about this proposal. And we wrapped up both of those efforts. It took about 3 years and finally felt that we had enough information, kind of concluded this due diligence phase, had heard from people, and were able to pass that information on to the council and decide so that they could decide, is this an issue that we want to move forward with? And the vote that was taken last month is not yet to submit a petition. Actually, it was just giving us direction to start drafting
the petition.
To draft
one, yes.
So what we're doing now is a tremendous amount of research. The state has very clear standards about what needs to be in this petition in far as the information that has to be included. But they've also got very strict standards as to when annexation would be approved, what those thresholds that have to be met. So we're working internally, gathering documents and starting to piece that together. It's probably going to be a few more months before we're ready to bring back a draft to show to the public and show to the council.
And I guess as I've been following this sort of as it's gone along, kind of in real time, I've been learning things about how this works at the state level. I'm sure you have as well. And going through the local boundary commission and municipalities exercising this right to annex, state sanctioned right to annex, has it been used a lot? Is it a popular option? Is there a lot of sort of case history to go along with how this process works and other situations that mirror sort of what Soldotna is considering right now?
Well, it's definitely not popular. I mean, that was one of your questions.
Well,
and that's
certainly,
something yeah. I mean, so the process is as old as the state. So one of the questions that comes up very often from folks is, you know, why would the city pursue this legislative method where we submit an application to this local boundary commission and they make a decision, and people don't have an option to vote. Why would that be the preferred option? As opposed to some other method. And the more, for me, it always comes back to a question of what's going to be the fairest process, both for the residents in the areas and the municipality, recognizing that folks in areas outside the city may have selected to be there intentionally. They may not be interested in being incorporated. On the other side, recognizing that the city has an obligation to deliver services that are somewhat impacted by the growth that happens outside our boundaries. And so the process that we're moving forward with, the legislative review, is actually one that was drafted in the state's constitution. And the local boundary commission was set up as an independent board because the founders recognized that decisions like this are really difficult, and they felt that it was best made outside of local politics and influence. So That's our preferred method to move forward, and that process in itself is very long. We spent the last 3 years, as we mentioned, kind of getting to this decision point. The process from here on is at least another year or more, and the state will allow a lot of input from any interested party, anyone who wants to participate. But our preference is, you know, that this is a real issue, and we have an obligation to look forward and ensure that we can continue to meet the needs of the larger community moving forward. And this process in the Constitution, with this independent review and decision making, we felt is the most appropriate.
And we have heard, as this discussion has gone along, we have heard pretty much everybody who's weighed in wanting there to be some sort of a vote on this. Mm-hmm. And can there be? Will there be?
There could be a vote, yeah. So although the legislative was the original default method, later the state legislature created different opportunities, different processes that can be followed. And one of them is called local action. Local action requires actually two elections. It would require a vote of the existing city residents, and it would require a separate vote of registered voters in those impacted areas. Looking back and the research we've done, it's not something that had been used very often, or if at all, we could find for an annexation like this. It was a process that was created for annexations that were prejudged to be kind of non-controversial, small. And actually, Soldotna's had a handful of those types where one property owner wants to come into the city or two, and they're adjacent, and if they consent, then it's really an easier pathway mm-hmm. for that to happen. For a process like ours, our recommendation is that it's not a good fit. And it's not entirely a perfect process either. It feels more democratic to a lot of people. But again, it only allows registered voters to vote. And as we know, around Soldotna, a lot of that is undeveloped land or it's commercial. And so the business owners or the landowners who have the greatest interest in this decision still might not be allowed to participate in that process. And because it's a state process, you know, we, the city, are beholden to it just as the residents are. And when we come back to, again, this big important question about where are the appropriate boundaries and who should be included in this municipality, we keep coming back to this other process.
What's the sort of the measuring stick or the mark for what makes sense when the local boundary commission goes to look at this, will they be saying, all right, the city of Soldotna has their eye on, you know, a certain size footprint or a certain tax base, or, you know, what is that ultimate goal? Is it for revenue? Is there a dollar amount attached to this? We're trying to get X amount of dollars in tax revenue, because we have incorporated all this, we have to pay for those services, etc. What is that benchmark?
There's actually several, and
yeah.
And we so Soldotna is about 7 square miles, and the areas that we're looking at are an additional 4 square miles approximately, and it's different for different areas. So one of the criteria is that the area has a reasonable need or an expectation for a need of city services. And so when we look at that criteria, we look at areas where the city's already providing water and sewer to properties outside the city. There's about 24 businesses, residences, where they're outside the city currently, but our infrastructure is already serving that area and they've made a request to come in and get that service. So you know, the ability to serve these areas is one criteria. The state wants to understand and ensure that the local municipality has the capacity, whether it's additional police officers or an additional grader to maintain roads, that the city has the capacity to serve those areas fully with all the services they provide. Other characteristics that they require is that an area be of similar population, demographics, similar type of development, as well as looking to eliminate enclaves, you know, and increase efficiency. So, you know, Funny River Road is an area that's long been talked about for potential. And one of the reasons that makes sense from our perspective is that we have to drive out of the city to get back into the city at the airport. And yet, you know, if it's police response or animal control or road graders, the city has the ability to accommodate that whole section along the way much more efficiently than requiring a different level of government to come in and just address that enclave, that small area that's carved out. So different characteristics or qualifications. And in some of the areas we're looking at, like I said, they offer different potential reasons why they make sense for us to at least consider.
And I know during the last work session that the city council had about this issue, it was really sort of winnowing down and figuring out precisely what areas they were really interested in. And what I found interesting about that was the idea that part of this sort of calculus is simply, very simply, just what looks good and makes sense on a map. And you mentioned that connectivity and not, you know, driving out of the city to get back to city property and other places like that. And I was just very interested in how that map was sort of sliced and diced and how it was put together. And I guess how beholden will the local boundary commission be to the sort of implicit wishes of the council? I know that's, it's sort of been put out there that we're not so interested in residential properties. That seems to be sort of the basic wish of the council at this point anyway. How beholden is the local boundary commission to kind of read between the lines and figure out what makes sense? Or does this, every single line of this absolutely have to be documented? Is there going to be some conversation? How does that work?
So the way, answer one of your questions, the way the lines were drawn, I think you're right, the council, even previous council members and mayors who have been involved in this conversation, and even looking back to the previous effort that was vetoed by Soldotna's mayor back in 2007, 2008,
right.
A lot of opposition came from neighborhoods where residential houses are built, and residents said, we feel like we have everything we need. My house is built, my road, I'm happy with the maintenance. I have a well in septic. I really like my water. I don't want to have to give that up. And I think part of the carving out and the narrowing of these areas, which now predominantly are commercial in nature, was in deference to those wishes of the community. So I think the council heard that loud and clear, and where they could, tried to exclude those areas because those residents didn't want to be included. One other characteristic of annexation that I didn't mention is it's allowed, the reason it exists is for municipalities to have the ability to ask for adjustments if there's a threat that development would undermine their tax base. So it's not true to say this isn't about taxes. In some respect, it absolutely is. But I think that's a reasonable conversation to have with people, even people who disagree about whether annexation should move forward or not. This process exists in part in recognition that if a new commercial area is able to spring up and develop maybe at lower cost, lower regulation, adjacent to an existing city, that impacts the city's ability to continue serving, providing the services which are required under the statutes. So we focus a lot on commercial areas, but the commercial areas we're talking about are down the street or literally across the street or in some cases in between. So it doesn't feel to me, I take exception when people feel like it's a land grab. It's still a really small area we're looking at, and areas where we feel are only have the highest justification even to be talking about this.
Another part of that conversation among the council and through these work sessions and public meetings and this sort of thing is again this idea that to the degree possible that any area that potentially might be annexed, the city would in theory try to not make it any more burdensome than necessary, which is to say, if you're outside the city limits now and you have a business and there are certain things that we will sort of grandfather in. You're not going to have to pave your parking lot overnight, things like that. And I'm just curious, you know, does that, depending on what that final map might potentially look like, does that lead you to any concern about there being like some sort of this weird sort of patchwork of zoning and who's allowed in and who's allowed out and who has to follow this rule and who doesn't have to follow that rule? And at what point does that start to become an issue?
So I'm glad you brought this up, because I hoped that we would talk about kind of what we've heard from people. And there's some really common themes. One of the biggest concerns that we hear from many people, which I understand, is regulation. So it's a very different regulatory landscape in terms of building codes and zoning, whether you're inside or outside the city. It doesn't cause me concern that we wouldn't be able to address many of the concerns that we've heard, because, you know, prior to being the city manager, I was the zoning department director for 10 years, and we have a staff that is creative and problem solvers and open to ideas that are different. We're not adverse to change. Zoning can be a really scary thing. And again, at that meeting you referenced where there was a lot of testimony recently, we still heard people say people want to be able to have farm animals. And that's great. We already allow farm animals in many parts of Soldotna, and we'll continue to allow, you know, that's an impact that I think we can deal with. We can solve that issue. No problem. Zoning doesn't have to mean that all of Soldotna looks the same. So in many respects, that wouldn't make sense at all. So if there's areas where paving, landscaping, signs don't need the level of regulation that we feel that our downtown does for different reasons, we're willing to accommodate that. I think that makes sense for a community. And being respectful of the fact that people choose this area that have different lifestyles and different needs. Some people don't want city water and sewer or sidewalks. That causes me less concern than it causes members of the public. But that, you know, I recognize that is one of the chief complaints from people who prefer their lifestyle to stay exactly the way it is and are uncomfortable with uncertainty about what being a city resident would mean for their business, mean for their life.
You know, and again, going back to some of these sort of bullet points that we've heard as this conversation has developed, especially over the last few years, as the progress of this whole thing has moved forward a little bit, is this idea that the borough should somehow get involved, because we're talking about borough areas adjacent to the city, and especially those areas where folks live. And what we hear time and time again is, I chose to live in the borough, I want to live in the borough. And just to be clear, there's really not any role that the borough has in this specifically. And I don't know what those conversations are like sort of at the administration level, but what is that conversation like? Does the borough think you're taking land from them?
Well, we respect, we met recently with the borough mayor and his chief of staff and value their input. We're all in this together, you know, whether folks are city residents or not residents, we're all borough residents, and we want everybody to succeed and be successful in their business and their lifestyle. So they've shared some insight with us, some thoughts, and we welcome that input. Whether or not the borough administration and the assembly will take a formal position is really up to them. There's not a formal role that would be required. As we kind of talked about this process, this application goes to the state, and there's a state board tasked with that decision making. But it's a process that allows a wide variety of input, whether from an organization or an advocacy group or another level of government. And it's not uncommon that, I think the Fairbanks example, there was an annexation years ago where the city and the borough were not aligned in their interests on the outcome of that decision. So it's something that I'm interested in, that I'll want to be able to give them as much information as they require. And we're open to feedback as well, because it is a decision that impacts not just our government, but other entities.
In looking at how this is all submitted to the state, I'm curious, is there even room for this in that draft petition and the materials you send to the state eventually, potentially, a broad economic goal? I'm sure there will be studies done and economic impact analysis done like that, but are there specific economic goals for this, for the city, that the city has in mind right now?
So one of the, I think, common misconceptions that I've heard often is that the city has desires for some type of development to occur, whether it's on vacant land or outside the city. And I can honestly say from my perspective that has not been a consideration. So I see this more as a process that's kind of looking at what's happening or what has already occurred and trying to mitigate and keep up with that impact. So there are some areas. One of the areas that is across Cay Beach from the Sports Center has a lot of vacant land that's not developed yet. Yeah, I think the city has a lot of benefit that we could bring to that that area if we planned ahead of time for water and sewer, for example, to be extended across the road. But we don't have kind of a master plan or designs on particular types of commercial development. We're just looking at, you know, you look at the portion of Cay Beach where there's a tremendous amount of growth and development. The city's not causing that, and we don't have a particular interest other than recognizing that it's occurring and making sure that we can look forward 20, 30 years from now and still be able to pave our roads. You know, provide parks that people want, those kind of services.
Yeah, that's you mentioned pave our roads, because that's something that I've heard come up a couple of different times is, you know, there are some gravel resources in some of these areas, and you want to lock those up for future development by putting houses on top. And of course, then you get into the argument of developing gravel pits here locally. But the fact remains, I don't think anybody is anticipating there being a substantial slowdown in folks moving to the peninsula for whatever reason. And so you have to accommodate that somehow. It takes certain materials to do that, and this all goes into that calculus.
Yeah. So one of the comments that we received at one of the recent meetings was about kind of a citizen who's concerned about not enough gravel, good gravel sources in the area to accommodate construction moving forward, and he recognized that there was a property in one of these areas that might be a good source of gravel. I don't anticipate that if the city boundaries moved and that area became part of the city, that would either preclude or encourage any particular source of development on that property. It's really going to be up to the property owners to continue to make those decisions. And our commercial district, I mean, a lot of the areas we're looking at outside Soldotna feel commercial in nature. It's kind of a do what you want in terms of the type of use you want to develop. It accommodates residential, it accommodates a wide variety of commercial and industrial uses. So it's not the case that if the city boundaries expanded that we would then have undue influence in the type of businesses or even whether it was commercial or residential. There's still a tremendous amount of flexibility. That decision belongs with those landowners.
And you know, it's occurring to me as we're talking about some of these different areas and what they would provide for potential annexation and those sort of things. We haven't actually talked about what the latest map looks like, and maybe we could kind of walk through and describe what those areas are that are potentially going to be studied and submitted to the state for consideration perhaps one day.
Right. So, sure, the areas that the city is looking at moving forward with and incorporating into the petition include that section of Funny River Road between the Sterling Highway and the Soldotna Airport. Also includes land where Salteshi Trails is and across Cay Beach from, example, the Sports Center. So where Cook Inlet Academy and the food bank is, when you're driving down that section of Cay Beach, on one side is in the city, on the other side is out. So we're looking at that frontage.
That area struck me as interesting because there's, especially that part that has Salteshi in it, you know, that's a big chunk of land that's sort of already spoken for and doesn't generate a lot of revenue. What would be the benefit for bringing that area in, just simply because it makes sense, it looks good on a map, or?
It's totally revenue neutral. I mean, as you point out, Salteshi is borough owned. It's a nonprofit that manages it. The city funds a portion of Salteshi as an organization every year. They're one of the organizations that we provide funding and support to. So it's not a revenue issue. It's not a concern necessarily about future development. It's more just a recognition that here's this property that's literally adjacent to our community, feels like it's part of our community, and, you know, is that something that should be included?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's can we move down the map a little bit more? So yeah.
Turn in the corner. So the other section of Cay Beach, it was called Study Area 4. This is that portion that's really commercially developing where the Copper Center is, used to be the Red Diamond Center.
Right.
All of those businesses, the Orca Theater, the Duck Inn.
And behind there is where we were talking just a few minutes ago about some of those concerns about there being some gravel resources back there, and and how do you manage that? What do you do with that? Yeah, that's an important area.
Right. So that's an area where we heard from some business owners. Their concerns, one of the big ones is sales tax. So we haven't addressed it right now, but yet in this conversation. But I think one of the predominant concerns in addition to regulations is the extra sales tax. So businesses outside the city collect 3% on behalf of the borough. If they were to be coming inside the city, they would also collect an additional 3% on behalf of the city. And for businesses, that is one of the sticking points, I think, in that folks fear that that comes right off of their bottom line. So when I look at Area 4, that's one of the considerations. Our water and sewer is pretty close to there. We've got one of those utilities all the way to the college, water. But extending water and sewer through that area would not be an easy fix because it's already so developed.
Right.
So it's not going to pencil out necessarily, even if we could extend the main, for someone to dig into their parking lot and retie their business if they wanted to. They wouldn't be required to do that, but looking ahead, that's not something that I think is an instantaneous fix for people or necessarily desirable from their standpoint. But what you get also is police presence. You know, we've got a police force that can cover an area quickly, really fast response times. Property taxes would go down. They're currently lower in the city than outside the city. And, you know, we get to open them up to some of the other stuff we do that we feel good about, you know, this economic development assistance with people, you know, if they need data, if they need assistance testifying on behalf of their liquor license, you know, those are all things we do for our businesses. We'll continue to do.
And moving sort of to the other side of town, in the Ridgeway area, those are some parts of Ridgeway that have been included in this. And that's, again, that's another one of those areas that, looking at it, you know, sort of on the map from a broad perspective, you go, well, how is that not already sort of part of the city of Soldotna? Yeah.
I think the exercise we're going through right now feels like what happened when Soldotna started, which was, Let's find out who wants to be in, who wants to be out, and that's how we'll draw those lines.
Which might very well explain why the footprint of Soldotna is so small today, because there weren't a lot of takers 50 years ago.
Yeah, those original 348 residents were the ones willing to raise their hand. And that's why our shape is unique. Some cases with this carve-out I talk about on Funny River Road, my understanding is that was a who wants in and who wants out kind of conversation.
Right.
That's also why I think Soldotna is so small compared to average cities in Alaska. So we're 7.4 square miles. I think Kenai's 35 square miles. Homer is close to 30. Seward is 20-something. Mm-hmm. So we're very unique in our footprint, our official city boundaries, very small and unique. And even still, as the council is looking at the map and saying, are we willing to move forward with certain areas, there is a tendency to want to accommodate everyone who wants to stay out. And that causes this map to become smaller and smaller and us to focus really on what is the most important thing we're talking about. I think that's good and bad. I think it shows that we're listening to people and can accommodate their wishes, but still recognizing that it's an important conversation that we feel has to move forward.
Yeah. And some of these areas are, you mentioned Red Diamond Center is an area that's already very heavily developed, but
it's
some of these,
Copper Center, yes.
Yeah. Copper Center is already very heavily developed, but there are other areas that are being looked at that are sort of undergoing some development right now. I'm looking, you know, thinking about as you head out of town towards Sterling, there's the new restaurant at the top of the hill there, the Whistle Stop, I mm-hmm. believe it's called. And so how is that being taken into account? Stuff that's sort of in that in-between stage where there's a little bit of development there, but not a lot. Is that more favorable because you're catching folks who are trying to develop there early? You can have these conversations right now as they're just sort of getting off the ground, as opposed to coming in, you know, years and years later when they're established and those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. So the restaurant that's going on the hill is exciting and fabulous and actually in the city already.
Yes. Yeah. I've got to get my lines straight. I've looked at too many spaghetti maps.
Yeah. I think it's undoubtedly, we recognize that this conversation becomes harder to have after development's occurred. So if in the 70s, when the city of Soldotna first recognized that maybe they should consider annexation, one of our comp plans from, I think, 1975 had this as a high priority goal. If it had occurred in the 70s, it would be a really different kind of conversation than we're having now. Because as development occurs, it becomes more challenging. It also means that we've got less benefit to offer. So the water and sewer example is a good one. I mean, if an area is already developed, it eliminates the opportunity to have kind of a cost-efficient way to share that benefit and that utility. So it is becoming more challenging in part because of growth occurring. And again, looking forward, trying to think about our area for the next 20 or 30 years, it's not going to get easier. I think this pressure, this in versus out, and this idea that, you know, we serve a big population, but there's a smaller subset of that population that actually directly pays for those services through mm-hmm. their property taxes, that tension, I think, will continue to be there. And
yeah.
and I think also that's why this has been so frustrating for a lot of area residents, is because they've been through this before.
Yes.
They were through it recently. Many folks remember this conversation from decades ago, and yet mm-hmm. it never moves forward, but the concerns persist.
Right.
From the municipality standpoint, different administrations over the years.
Well, and one of the things that I find so fascinating about it, and sort of planning in general, is, of course, hindsight is 20/20. But, you know, this is an opportunity to try to do your best to prognosticate what's the situation going to be like 20, 30, 40 years down the road. Because, again, hindsight's 20/20. If we could look back, nobody, thanks Mr. Binkley for all that land in the middle of town, but that's not a good place for the hospital and air traffic coming in and out. That's not maybe the best place for the borough building. That's where in a normal town, not that Soldotna is not normal, but, you know, right in the middle of town is where you would find a downtown. And so this notion that this is an opportunity to, even if things don't necessarily make sense now, that they might make sense down the road, I think might be appealing to some people. At least it's appealing to me as I look at this from kind of a 500-foot view, and keeping in mind some of those things that I don't want to call the mistakes of the past, but just things that weren't even considered 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. There's a chance to consider those now, and it's tough. Nobody has a crystal ball, but at least there's that opportunity.
Something that I believe, and I think this is probably coming from my experience as a land use planner, is that change is inevitable. A lot of people love aspects of this community that we want to stay the same. We want to protect that thing. But by recognizing that, sometimes we have to take action to protect those things and keep them the way we want them, because the change is happening, the growth is happening. And if it happens in a way where we don't have an ability to influence it or put our interests in place, kind of we're along for the ride. And I think that's, again, something that can concern people about zoning or planning in general. Whereas I see it as a tremendous benefit, because it's an opportunity for us to get together as a community inside the city, outside the city, and identify what are those things that matter to us. And scan the landscape, what's happening around us, and do we need to do anything to protect that?
Yeah, and you know, something that's popped up sort of throughout the hour here that we've been spending with Stephanie Queen, Soldotna City Manager, and my gosh, we're kind of winding down already. It's just flown right, yeah, right? Flown right by. We didn't even take a break at the bottom of the hour. There was so much to talk about.
Just keep going.
just keep swimming. We've talked about taxes in a couple of different ways so far, be it the potential for new sales and property taxes with annexation, but I'm thinking about some potential ballot initiatives that will be up for borough voters this fall in terms of a sales tax, and I know that there have been conversations, again, between city administrations and the borough administrations about broadly sort of tax policy and what those things mean for each entity, and just to kind of ask you, what do those proposals mean for the city of Soldotna? How I know that the Soldotna as a city is incredibly dependent on sales tax mm-hmm. For revenue, and so how big of a change in borough sales taxes affects the city, and how much of a concern is that, those sorts of things?
Well, I've been attending some more borough meetings recently just to stay educated on those conversations that are going on, and I appreciated that we had an opportunity to have a work session a couple months ago where the elected officials and administrators from the different municipalities got together with the borough administration, the assembly, to talk about this idea of, you know, budgets moving forward and revenue. From our standpoint, you know, Soldotna, as you mentioned, is heavily reliant on sales tax, which it's been a tremendous benefit. Our property tax mill in the city is one half of one mill. It's incredibly low. It's lower than the borough, as I mentioned, outside the city. Because we continue to have such dense commercial development. I think, not that I have an opinion on those proposals, but it's just something that we're aware of. Similarly, as we're aware, a lot of our retailers are feeling the pressure from online retail. That's something that we are keeping in mind. You know, if we've got a lot of businesses that are experiencing some hard times because people's buying is shifting to online, that impacts the businesses. It also impacts the city's sales tax revenue. So it's just something to be aware of and thoughtful about. But for now, we just adopted our budget recently. We didn't propose any changes to property tax rate. It's still half a mil, a historic low for the city, as we've been for the last couple of years. We didn't propose any new revenue sources at the city. So for now, we're going to wait and see.
I'm glad you brought that up, about online retailers and the effect that online retailers have, especially up here in Alaska, where things are so far flung. I'm curious, are there specific types of businesses that are sort of, for lack of a better term, sort of better for the city of Saldanha in terms of the sales tax? I mean, as retail becomes difficult or more competitive, is it better to have a town full of retail stores that sell stuff or a town full of restaurants that serve food? I mean, what's a mix thereof, I'm sure, is quite desirable.
Sure.
But in broad terms, kind of, is there a certain industry that just makes more sense?
From
the city's perspective?
I think in the broadest terms, there's a recognition that things that people can wait for, they're more likely to buy online now. But something that you need now, groceries or eating out or live music, or that those are parts of the service industry and retail sector that would be less impacted by online sales. We don't have a preference. I think it's great that we've got a great local bookstore. You know, people can buy books online, and they do. I hope we continue to have a local bookstore in Saldanha. Other types of retail clothing, I know, they've taken a hit. It's really difficult for them to compete with this changing way that people like to shop. But because Saldanha has a lot of entertainment type restaurants, bars, breweries, I think those industries will be relatively less impacted. And one of the reasons why we've talked about them over the years is because they feel like a good sweet spot between trying to attract people and build our community up as a great place to live, where people want to live, as well as catering to visitors, which our area is still heavily dependent on. So, again, just something that we're aware of, thinking about, and going to meet with business owners and find out if there's something that they're concerned about that we can do to help. We'd love to know what that is.
And we've got just about a minute and a half left here. I wanted to ask you real quickly about one particular industry that was hotly debated here a couple of years ago, the cannabis industry. There was a moratorium. The moratorium came off. And I guess I am not paying attention. I haven't noticed any storefronts pop up, but are there cannabis businesses in Saldanha? Not yet.
No.
No takers?
No takers. I guess
all
that's
fight
for
nothing,
for
being late to the party.
No, you know, the council wanted to take a wait-and-see approach while mm-hmm. state regs and the industry was really figuring itself out. We've had a couple people coming in and taking a look at some spots, but nothing that's moving forward just yet.
Interesting. Well, I'm sure that will be an area for further discussion and debate and possible growth as we move ahead. But, gosh, we've gotten through a lot. Is there anything that we missed, Stephanie?
I think we covered it. I didn't talk about all the construction projects going on. So maybe
you got a quick minute.
Okay, we got Kobuk is being resurfaced, and we're replacing the sidewalks to make them ADA accessible at the ramps. A lot going on at the wastewater treatment plant. We're installing some high-efficiency blowers that's a $3 million project that we're updating that facility, making some important improvements. Also a lot going on at the airport. We've got a lot of new hangars in the last couple of years, and we're going to be doing some additional resurfacing and a new warm storage building. So it's July, construction season, business as usual.
We are here, and you have been here with us for the Kenai Conversation. Joined this morning with Saldanha's city manager, Stephanie Queen. Stephanie, thanks so much for coming in today. It was great to talk with you.
Thanks for having me, Shailen.